Shabbat Shalom and welcome to Kehilat Tenuva, The Harvest, a Messianic Charismatic Congregation in Thornton, Colorado. You're listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. Our goal is to provide, for free, the message of the Torah from a Messianic Judaic perspective. Here's Pastor Mark.
Shabbat Shalom. So today I want to talk about being adopted. And I want to share with you my journey. It's been a journey of hope. I want to call to attention that God causes all things to work together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose. And because of this, you and I are going to be okay. Come what may, everything's going to be okay. So I'm going to share with you an overview of my life story. This really isn't about me, so to speak, but rather about God's work in me. And that's why I want to share it. And I know it's going to inspire many, many people who are listening and will hear this message. The point I want to make is that we all have a story. You have a story. I want to encourage you to develop your story and to tell your story. It'll give hope to people all around. Like we said a week or two ago, we are hope dealers. We deal in the realm of hope for a world around us that is in fear and in desperation. We are the messengers of hope. So I'm going to begin with Psalm 51 and verse 5, the words of King David. We're all familiar with this passage. It says, "Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me." That verse has always resonated deep in my heart. And the reason is my mother conceived me out of wedlock when she was 15 years old. And that was back in the late 50s, of course, when that was just unacceptable in every sense. She was sent away quietly behind the scenes to have her baby in a way that, because it's behind the scenes, there would be no shame that would come to the family. And then she would be brought back. So she did. And she gave me up for adoption. She didn't want to do that. There was a lot of pressure on her. But she knew that that was the right thing to do. So she made the painful sacrifice of giving me up for adoption. I love that guy. So that is me at about approximately 6 months of age. She gave me up, and I went to an orphanage, a Catholic orphanage, and I remained there until I was adopted some 6, maybe 9 months later, at the most a year later. It was sometime between that 6 month period and that nine month period that I was adopted. My parents who came in, now let's not go there yet. But when they came in, my parents, my dad was blue collar all his life, military, and then blue collar. So he comes in and they look around at all the little, it was like going shopping at Woolworths or whatever, you know? So they went crib to crib to crib, and then my dad finally said, "All right, put a sold sign on this one." And everyone was offended, but back then, you didn't have to be PC, so you could get away with it. So he said, "Put a sold sign on that one. We're taking him." So my parents adopted me. Now let me read this verse for you, Psalm 71 and verse 6. God says, or David here in Psalm says to the Lord, "By you I have been sustained from my birth." Because David too had that type of shame in his birth. You can, if you read about David's history, this is what happened with David and with so many of us, really. It's not that uncommon. He says, "By you I have been sustained from my birth. You are he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually with you." So God sent this young Catholic couple to come and get me because he was with me when I was conceived. He watched over me in my birth. He appointed for me a young Catholic couple who their firstborn child was born dead, a stillbirth. And they discovered that in the woman that would become my mom, that she had ovarian cancer, and so they did an immediate hysterectomy. And this young Catholic couple, keep that up, please. Just go ahead and keep that up. This young Catholic couple said, we're going to adopt a family. And they adopted 5 kids, all from different families, not at the same time, but they spaced it out just like they were having kids. They adopted kids. And they took on 5 from the nations. 5 of us from different ethnic backgrounds. It was an amazing family that they put together. But in this, God had met me. In this, God had oversaw that I would be taken care of. And so I read this verse, by you I have been saved from my birth. And I say, yes, I get that. My heart resonates with this. You're the one who took me from my mother's womb. You watched over me. I was never alone. You're my praise forever and ever. Here's another picture of me at 2.5 years old. How could Don ever resist that young guy, huh? It was a done deal. That's Harrison. So, thank you. Thank you. I received that. So, let me shift gears a little bit and talk about, you know, the adoption syndrome, which is basically a very common syndrome among most people that are adopted. So of course, growing up in my earliest memories in my childhood, I was always angry. There was an anger deep inside of me. And as I grew older and older, I found myself hating delegated authority. If someone was in authority, I just automatically was angry at them. I didn't understand why, but I just didn't like them. You know, I had a hard time with my mom and my dad. I had a hard time with my teachers in school. I had a hard time with the law enforcement. I couldn't understand what was going on. But I remember always feeling disconnected. From my earliest years, they told us when we were very, very young that we were all adopted. They explained what adoption was, that we were adopted. And I remember struggling with that because all I could think of was, how come my mom didn't want me? You know, what's wrong with me? Why was I rejected? Why was I abandoned? Why was I forsaken by the very one who should have embraced me? I was angry. I couldn't understand anything else. I would look into the eyes of my brothers and sisters, and I would think, you're not my brothers and sisters. You know that. I know that. I look at my cousins. We'd be at our cousin's house all the time. We had a great family clan, always getting together, big family gatherings. Always and forever, no matter who I looked at, interacted with in my family clan, I was always thinking, you're not my cousins, and you know it, and I know it, but we got to play like we're all connected. It was painful. I don't think they thought that at all. It was part of that whole adoption complex and syndrome that if you're adopted, you struggle with. I remember a time when I was about 12 years old. I was in a big fight with my mom. One of my cousins was over, and she was babysitting, and my parents came home, and I had this big fight with my mom, and my cousin was there, and so I was sitting in the kitchen, and my mom was, you know, telling me, you know, I need to listen to her, da-da-da-da-da, and I finally looked up. My cousin said, Mark, you need to listen to her. She's your mother. I looked at my cousin, and I said, she's not my mother. Then I looked at my mom, and I said, you're not my mom. Yeah, I'm thinking, You know, I loved her, but I hated her. It was the weirdest thing. It had no rationale to it at all. But I was angry, and for whatever reason, I'm directing that at the one that adopted me. All of that was just crazyville. And my mom, she knew, I mean, they had great counselors back then, and Catholic Charities. I mean, they did adoption like no one's business. They still do a great job. And so my mom and dad were prepared for all that kind of fallout anyway, and they saw beyond that, and they loved me through it, and they didn't take offense, and I'm so glad. But I felt bad about that. I would feel shamed by what I would say on top of all the other shame. So I get into my teenage years. Things are just getting a little bit more intense. I choose my favorite rock and roll band. I remember I had this, you know, we had the vinyl records. Remember the vinyl records? For those that are old enough, you know? Had my little phonograph player, you know? I'd go downstairs in the basement, and I'd take off the removable speakers, which was back in those days. They still had wires, of course, you know? But that was like, you could take the speakers off the system. That was like... And I would lay on the floor in the basement in my room, and I'd put the speakers on both sides to get that surround sound back in the day, you know? And I would crank it. I would crank it, and I would listen to music for hours. That was my escape. That was how I got out of my pain. That's how I just kind of like, you know, got away from all the stuff that bothered me that seemed to hold me down. But you know the problem was? I wasn't listening to any of the music that would have helped me. But the stuff that was fueling my anger, the band I chose as my favorite band was Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath, you know? Who would have known that I'd become one of the champions of the Sabbath among the Gentiles? So I'm down there with the enemy thinking that he's got an easy path to destroy my life. And God's saying, you think? Because I'm the one that causes all things to work together for the good of those that love me and are called according to my purpose. And that's my son. So lost in that music, fueling all the violence and the anger, I just got worse and worse. And I developed this appetite for violence, which fueled my drive in martial arts, opened the door to compete, and then finally become a world-class professional kickboxer, all the way up into the top 10, competing with the finest in the sport from around the world. Listen to me. I was good because I was angry. I got to the place where I wanted to hurt people, and that was my outlet. That's part of what made me successful in a weird way. Not a good way. In a weird way. But I was about to discover, again and again and again, this idea that God was involved in my life from my birth. That he took me from my mother's womb and carved a plan for my life. A plan that I was on a collision course with. A promise that he made to me that I would yet understand. But man, the power of it is so beautiful, and it's your promise too. And that promise is this: I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. What you experience in life is not the life that I have for you. I'll never desert you, never leave you, nor forsake you. Now that means a whole lot to a young man growing up, alienated and angry because he was rejected and forsaken, at least in his mind. So I got born again in my late teens. I was 18 years old, going to 19, got radically born again, a traumatic, very, very powerful conversion. I was all demonized, so it was a lot of trauma. as I crashed into the kingdom of God by faith in Messiah. And after I crashed into his salvation, everything changed. 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creature. The old things passed away. Behold, new things have come. New things. A new perspective. God changed the way I thought about everything. I began to see everything in a way I'd never seen it before. I was looking through the lens of God's love for the first time. You know, when the Creator, who's more important than anyone else, when the Creator claims you and saves you and draws you in, nothing else matters. Nothing can break that. It's an indestructible bond. And I remember everything changed in terms of what I thought about myself and my past. It was a new beginning, but my perspective was turned around 180 degrees, and God showed me that my mother did not reject me, nor did she forsake me, but sacrificially, and to her great loss, gave me up for adoption. My adopted mother, this young Catholic woman, she freely chose me. She came and chose to take me as her own son. God was speaking to me in my heart saying, son, do you get that? Do you get that? Your birth mom loves you enough that she gave you up. That was an act of sacrifice, not a forsaking. Your new mother takes someone who's not even her own flesh as her own flesh and gives her life to raise you. You're a doubly loved son. I've watched over you since birth. My love is all around you. That was so transformational. I was going from this angry, bitter young man to turning into like this sensitive crybaby. Unbelievable. Overwhelmed by the love of God. What a journey it's been. This was God, this whole thing was God's fulfilling his promise to me by taking me from my mother's womb and sustaining me through a young married couple who would give me all that my birth mother wanted to give me and knew that she could not provide. Like King David, I also proclaim, my praise is continually of you. Dawn, the love of my life. Love at first sight. Before I was born again, years before I was born again, when she was in 10th grade, I saw her at her house. I brought a friend over that was so homely. You know, he wore pants like this, which back in the day, they're like high waters. Now they're in style. I'm styling, man. So, but he was homely, and he loved her sister, and he was too insecure to go over and try to talk to her. So I said, come on, I'll go with you. I'll be with you. You talk to her. I'll sit in the living room. I went over there. I'm sitting in the living room, minding my own business, and up out of the basement, her sister comes. I didn't know she had a sister. Up comes Dawn out of the basement. I'm sitting right there. She opened the door and came out, and she, for me, I don't know how she did, but she transitioned into slow motion for me. So she's walking in slow motion. She smiles at me. Her hair's down. I mean, she had long hair, and she's walking right in front of me. Her hair, I swear, touched my face, but the story gets better with the telling, right? Okay. I get her angel singing. It was like, la. So she goes all the way down the front living room, down the hallway, and then when she went into her bedroom, as she walked in and she turned around and shut the door, smiled at me again, and I said, oh, happy day. In my heart, I said, God, if you're there and you love me, that's the one I want. If you're listening, that's the one. Please make a note, whatever. That's the one. It would take years for us to reconnect, and we did. And it was an amazing story because the night I got born again and I was so messed up, part of my fear was I'm going to lose her because I am a whack job. I'm mental, I'm demonized, and it's getting really scary. And that took a while to get there. And I'm thinking, I think she's ready to go ahead and let me go. So even when I got born again in my neighbor's basement, he said, I want you to come up and share with Don. You know, you need to go tell Don that you received Jesus into your heart and that you're born again. I said, no, you got to tell her. He says, no, I want you to tell her. I said, no, you got to tell her. He says, come on. He says, you need to share your faith from the get-go. I said, no, I will. I'll share my faith. You know, I'll go around the neighborhood, whatever. But you got to tell her, because if I tell her, she won't believe it. I've been like crazy lately. I've been like, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I can't tell her, you know what? I love her. I want to marry this woman. And I'm afraid that I've already lost her. So he said, all right. So we went upstairs. He shared the gospel with Don, shared about what happened with me, then shared the gospel with her and asked her, do you want to receive Jesus into your heart as your Lord and Savior? She starts to cry, and I said, that's it, I've lost her. I think she's getting mad. No, actually, she started crying. She said, yes, I want to receive Jesus too. And she accepted Christ into her heart. And I remember that night thinking, God, you have saved me. I was in such a desperate place, and I was, and you saved me. You talk about grace upon grace. Not only did you save me, you saved my woman. Grace upon grace. I could not have asked for more than that. It was above and beyond what I could ever imagine. I went home that night so full of joy, thinking, I'm saved, and he saved this woman that I am smitten with and want to marry. It was grace upon grace. Bad news, on the day we're married, I'm coming from a Catholic upbringing, okay? Most of you are not going to be able to relate to this, but back in the day, if you didn't have 8 kids, you didn't have a family yet. If you were Catholic, 8 was the beginning point. That was like a small family, you know? 8's the starting point. So I'm like, you know, we're going to have a big family. You know, I had plans for a big family, marry young, have a big family. So we get married. On the day of our wedding, Don's mother tells her, oh, honey, I need to tell you something. She goes, I've never told you this, but when you were 6 months old, you were screaming all the time. We took you in, and they discovered that you had double hernia on each side. And they had misdiagnosed it for long enough that they'd grew enough that the doctors said that when they went in to try to repair that the ovaries were both extremely damaged and that she would probably never conceive. Yeah. On our wedding day, it's like, what? You never told your daughter? Because that's almost a non-negotiable for me being a young Catholic boy, you know? Unbelievable. So we were both like, what? This is unbelievable. So we went on. We just put our faith in the Lord. We said, you know what? Who knows? 3 years into the marriage, Don's pregnant. We just doing backflips. I'm saying, God, you just surprised me over and over and over. Your love never fades. And now we're pregnant. So both Don and I said, Lord, this is our miracle baby. We're gonna call this one our miracle baby, that we get to have a baby. And so we had our first daughter, Jessica, our miracle baby, and we had never been so happy in all of our life. And then, 15 years later, when we're thinking Jessica's going to be leaving home soon and we can travel the globe, lo and behold, Don approaching 40, conceives and is pregnant again. And we're doing backflips. We're so excited. We said, this is our promised child. We had our miracle child. We never thought we'd have another child. Having our first child was a miracle to begin with. And now another child, it's our promised child. And that pregnancy was just crazy. And we almost lost her several times in this pregnancy. I wish I could tell you more of the stories surrounding Shani. It was just very, very traumatic. And several times we thought, that's it. And then we get down towards, you know, into the pregnancy, and they went and did an ultrasound. And when they were doing the ultrasound, we went into the doctor's room, And so the doctor, we're seated, the nurse turns off the light, and it's just a monitor on a computer, and he's going over. He says, okay, we're going over the top of the head. He says, it's like you're looking straight down at the top of the skull into the baby, you know. And while he's talking and saying that, we see these two round circles on top inside of her skull, and he says, oh, no. Yeah, and right away, I lost my balance. It took my breath away. I thought, oh, no, what do you mean, oh, no, that? Why do you, shut up. You know, what are you thinking? How, you don't say, oh, no, the parents are here, you know. And then he said, oh, no, again, and then he clicked and froze the deal, and he took some notes on that, and then they turned on the lights, and he left the room, and he said, just wait here. So then he called us in. He had talked to a number of other doctors, and then he called us in, and he said, we have a problem. He says, the baby's brain has some issues. We think actually they're tumors. And so we want to do some more testing, but it's not looking good. And due to her age and so forth, they said, we want you to do an amniocentesis with another doctor. And then we're going to kind of help you make some decisions. Now, I knew exactly what they were talking about. And they were going to push for abortion. And then later, that's exactly what they tried to push us into. So I told the doctor, I said, listen. We're willing to see like the number one premier doctor in America, who's right here in Colorado, who is a specialist in this type of area. We'll go talk to him, but we're not doing the amniocentesis because we're not giving up this baby. This is our baby. Broken, still our baby. So we fought with them and eventually, well, it's a long story, but let me make the story short. We're sitting with this premier doctor. He was the best. I should tell you the story. It's so good. I don't have time, do I? I don't have time. But let me just say, we show up. They said, show up. We're doing the amniocentesis. And then you can talk to Dr. George. I said, no, actually, I'm going to show up, but I'm not going to do the amniocentesis, but I am going to talk to Dr. George. So we showed up, and so the other doctors came out. They wanted to do the amniocentesis. We said, we're not going to do that. They said, no, you have to do that, or you can't see Dr. George. I said, no, I already told you that I'm coming anyway, and I'm going to see Dr. George. So we're arguing, and then the receptionist says, well, it doesn't matter anyway. He's not in today. Not that I'm unbelievable, you know? So we're like, what? And they said, yeah, if you want, we can get someone else to come in and talk to you. They can do an ultrasound 4, and they can do that. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, Don, get your coat. We started getting our stuff. And then the doors open to the elevator at the end of the corridor of this medical facility, and this short kind of fat guy with curly hair comes walking out, and he's got a big white coat on, you know, comes walking out. And there's all these people on both sides of him. He had like a little entourage of people, and they all got clipboards, and they're talking to him. They're like, I don't know if they were interns or what. They're talking, and he's answering questions, and they're moving down the hall. He looked super important, like someone who was like Dr. George. So as he walks by, it just said, Dr. George! And he just stops, and he turns around, and he goes, yes. You know, I thought, it's him. I said, we're the McClellans. We called last week. Our physician called you. We're supposed to talk with you. Please, we need to talk with you. So he turned around, and he says, are they scheduled? And that same lady said, he's not coming in today. You know, she kind of put her head down. She goes, yeah. He goes, well, get my office ready. He says, come on in. So we went in, we're sitting there, he's doing an ultrasound 4. He says, we're going to look for the markers of Down syndrome because that was their big concern. And he says, these things on top of the head, because he's scanning all the stuff. He says, you don't have to worry about that. He says, usually there's only one. He says, you have two. They're the very things that feed the brain that's developing. He says, exactly the opposite of what your doctor told you. He says, this is actually a rare thing, but we're talking about super duper brain development, Shayna. Man. And she's rocking in school, always has. All right. So anyway, so we go in there and he says, so we're going to look for the 5 markers of Down syndrome. And we're going to move through those, and then we can get a good idea of what else is going on with the baby. He says, the first marker is usually the hand is clubbed. The thumb is over the fingernail or the fingers, and the hands are clubbed. He says, so let's look for that one. So he has the baby. The baby's in a side kind of seated position. And the baby's head turns and looks right at us. He goes, look, the baby's looking at us, you know? The baby looks at us and goes, he says, I think she's trying to say something. I'm telling you, God is my witness. I'm telling you, God is my witness. She goes, like this, and then she goes like this. He goes, that's one. It was great. He crossed that one off. It was awesome. We flew through that. Not a problem. It was amazing. 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 So, our promised child. Devil tried to kill her later. It was another story. We ended up in the hospital anyway. But I told Don, I said, when everyone said we're hours away and you know, this whole thing is like, it doesn't look like, you know, it just is so desperate. I told Don, she was so despondent and so alone in the hospital room. I said, Don, I said, this is our promised child. It's our promised child. We know this. We need to trust God and cry out to God because why wouldn't we expect crazyville like this, right? The enemy's always trying to take away our promises. So we prayed, and within hours it resolved itself. The doctors were astonished. They even released us the next day. So the rest is history. And then my firstborn daughter, Jessica, she had her first thunderbolt experience when this young, handsome man walked into her place of employment, Joshua Craig. She's saying, Dad, there's no one to marry. The Messianic movement's too small, you know. There's just like, what are we going to do, you know? Never going to happen, you know. I said, believe, cry out to God. It's unbelievable what God can do. And out of the blue, Josh walks into her life. An amazing young man, becomes my son-in-law. Gave us our first grandchild, Harrison. Man. Thank you, Josh and Jess. So, because I'm running out of time, let me just try to get down to the end of this. October 30th, 2013. All the laws in Colorado changed, might have changed across the nation, I can't remember. But they said, if you were adopted between these years, you can now get into your files. They're unlocked. So I filled out all the paperwork so that I could get into my files and get the very thing that I've been looking for my whole life. They sent me my original birth certificate. Don says, she calls me up. She says, hey, we got it. The envelope came in today, a big vanilla envelope. She says, I got it. She goes, I'm going to open it up. I said, don't open it up. She goes, no, I'll read it to you. I said, don't open it up. Don't, just put it in the room. Put it in the room. Do not open that up. That's mine. Leave it alone. She said, okay. So I came home. She says, go upstairs. Open it up. We got to open it up. So we went upstairs. I walked into the room. I saw the envelope. I'm thinking, man, I'm not feeling it. You know, I don't know, you know, and I'm getting all sweaty palmed. And so finally I told Don, I said, Don, you have to leave the room. I said, please, you just got to leave the room. I cannot do this with you in the room. You know, so she said, okay. So she leaves the room. I go and I get that envelope. I pull it out. I can't even focus my eyes. My eyes would not focus. I couldn't read anything. I just threw it on the bed and I threw myself on the bed and I just wept. After about 30 minutes, I got back up. I'm trying to look at it again. It was too much. It was all coming together. And then I began to see in print who I was. I'm reading my mother's name. I'm not going to give you her full name because I don't want to give out, you know, personal information. I'll give you the last name because it's a common name, so we're good with that. But I'm reading my mom's name, three names, you know, blank, blank, Kennedy. I'm a Democrat. I didn't even know it. Thinking, Kennedy, right? So then I'm reading down, I'm seeing my dad's name, you know, and it's Martinez. And I'm thinking, no way. The Sephardim, one of the largest clans of Sephardim out of Spain through the Inquisition, were the Martinez clan, settling right here in southern Colorado. And later I'd connect the dots. It's an amazing thing on my father's side. I'm thinking, wow, Martinez, Kennedy, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Then I saw my name. And just to read the name my mother gave me was just deeply moving. So I cried and cried. And then Dawn came in and I told her all about it. And then I set up a meeting with my daughters and went over to Josh and Jess's, told them as well. Took a little bit to kind of get that out, but it was amazing. So I did a number of searches. I spent countless hours on the web. I went through adoption sites that helped me. Nothing. I could not. There was just nothing to be found. Usually a young woman will change her name if she gets married again. And then if it's another marriage, it's really hard to find your birth mom, you know. And so under my circumstances. And so I finally just got to the place where I said, okay, I'm paying for someone to do this professionally. So we took the top search, adoptee search group out there and paid them their fee to go find my mom. And what they do is you pay up front, and then when they find your parent, you pay again. So they're highly motivated, of course, to find your parents. So nothing showed up. I wrote them several times. I gave them even more information. I gave them everything. And so they said, thank you. We think we can do this. So nothing. Dead end straight. So finally, after a couple of years of that, I gave up. I just gave up. I said, you know what? It's just not meant to be. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I've learned the secret of being content. When you're content, everything's okay. You know, so I was okay with that. I could let that go, even though from the time I was a little boy, I just wanted to know my mom. You know, that was like, I don't think a day went by in my life where I had not thought of my mother. But I let it go. I thought, that's it. And then I did some crazy deal on 23andMe, my DNA search. And under that DNA, I got to see a little bit about my people groups on both my dad's side and my mom's side. You know, it's wonderful. And then all these relatives start showing up. But they're all fourth cousin, which means nothing. You're all my fourth cousins, probably. Okay, so I mean, we're not really connected in the sense fourth cousins, nothing. You know? So I got like 1,000 fourth cousins, you know. But all of a sudden, this first cousin shows up. And I'm thinking, first cousin. Wow, that's kind of close. That might mean something. Reached out, nothing. You know, no dialogue. I thought, well, okay, whatever. Nothing. I don't know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, on Thursday of this week, like a thunderbolt on a cloudless day, I'm looking at my email from 23andMe that says, you have a new relative. It's a DNA match. We predict this is your half-sister. I mean, it just like took my breath away, sucked it out of me. I'm like, what? You know, my eyes are going in and out of focus again. I'm thinking, oh, not again, you know? So I clicked and went there. So I messaged this person. I said, 23andMe probably sent you the same message saying, we're like siblings? Does that mean anything to you? So this person writes back and says, no, I don't know, because like my parents are deceased and I've talked to all my siblings and mom and dad never said anything about another sibling. And I think we would have known, and no one in the family knows of another sibling. So this is kind of weird, but let me get back to you. No, she says, this is kind of weird. Do you have any more information? I said, yeah, let me give you some more information. And I gave her my mother's full name and where she lived when she had me. Because that's going to either be a hit or a miss, right? So then, you know, on that messaging where people are typing and it has the little thing and shows you they're typing. So I'm watching, I'm thinking, okay, she's going to answer. She's getting, this is it, do or die, right? This is it, you know? And all of a sudden it stops. And all of a sudden it picks up again, you know, and then it stops. And then Dawn's sitting next to me, you know, like, oh, they're writing again. They're writing again, you know? She'd go to the kitchen. I said, Dawn, they're writing. And she'd run back. Oh, never mind, you know. So about an hour later, she writes back. She says, I'm so sorry about the delay. I had to call all my siblings. She goes, I am not your sister. I am your aunt. I am your aunt. And you do have a sister. And she wants to meet you. And I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I said, I have one question. Is my mother still alive? Dancing hands, over and over, gotta wait, you know, waiting, waiting. And of course, the family's trying to really think through this because they don't know me. And they gotta think of their mother's well-being as well. And so there's a lot that has to be done. So I'm thinking, whatever, I can wait. I waited this long, right? So it finally comes back. They said, we've all decided to call your sister and to have her call your mother and to see, you know, what's going to happen at this point. And so the last 3 days, I've just cried a whole lot. I'm so spent emotionally. I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. But it is a good exhaustion. I am overwhelmed with all that has happened over the last couple days and all that God is doing. And looking back at my life and being able to see that God has been with me from the very beginning and that He has never forsaken me and that He never will. And that my life has been filled with surprises. And so what I want to say to each of you is that life will bring to you, and has for most of you, trials and tribulations. And there will be crisis, heartache, despair, discouragement, some things that are so overwhelming, you're going to think, I can't make it. I can't do this anymore. It's too much. That's life. But the balance of that is our God who causes all of that to work together for your good. That you got to remember, whatever you're going through or will go through, some of you will go through some tremendous hardships in your future. I want you to remember when they come to you, that God will cause that to come together for your good. He's going to turn that around for your benefit so that you can make it through that and, like King David, find your praise continually in Him. Because God causes all things to work together for your good, you and I are going to be okay. Regardless, it doesn't matter what happens, you and I are going to be okay. I called my mom this morning for the first time. They gave me the number earlier, I think it was Thursday, late Thursday, and I said, I can't call, you know. My sister gave it to me on Friday. I told her, I can't call, I'm sorry. In fact, I haven't talked to anyone, it's just all been email. I told the whole family, I said, look, and they've been so, so open to me. I said, look, I can't call anyone because all I'm going to do is cry. There's no conversation here. Just a big crybaby on the other end of the phone. And I'm not doing that. I want to talk, you know? So I got to work through this. So this morning, I picked up the phone. Don was with me. And my mom got her first phone call 60 years after the birth of her son. I thought through it. And I said, the first thing I'm going to say when she picks up the phone, the first thing I'm going to say is, hello, mother. I know that's trite, but that's what I wanted to say. I wanted her to hear from her son, hello, mother. And I did. I called her up. I said, hello, mother. And she goes, son. I said, yes, it's your son. You know, and so we just had a great time. We talked on the phone. And I told her, I said, mom, I said, you know, I was really angry growing up, and I thought you had forsaken me and rejected me. And I said, I just want you to know God has given me a new perspective in my life, and I know that you've always loved me. She says, I never rejected you. Hardest thing I ever did. She says, not one day has gone by that I have not thought of you. I have longed to connect with you. I cannot believe this is happening. I said, Mom, I want to come see you. She says, please, I want to see my son. You know, it's just an amazing dialogue. And I said, Mom, I'm not angry anymore. I know you did this because you loved me. I'm so proud of you. And I'm so in love with you. And I, too, have lived my life every day thinking of you, trying to find you. And now God has opened up those doors. My life is full of blessing. Yes, hardship, crisis, but God has sprinkled that with surprises that have turned all those tables. And I can say, with the experience, not just from a faith statement, but from experience, that God has caused all things to turn around for my good in my life. And my life is doubly blessed with two wonderful families, my birth family that I'm just getting to know, and my adopted family, amazing family clans. I'm so blessed. Be encouraged. I'm going to play this song. And in closing, I pray it ministers to your heart, whatever you're going through. I want you to know it's going to be okay. You hold on to God. Rather, forget that. You don't even have to. God's holding on to you. God's holding on to you. You just let him hold you and get you through it.
Yahweh spoke to Moses saying, speak to Aaron and his sons saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And we add, in the name of Yeshua our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, so you shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. Yivarech Adonai ve'ishmerecha, Yaher Adonai panavalecha ve'ihunecha. Isa Adonai panavalecha ve'asemlecha shalom. Shabbat shalom.
You've been listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. We hope you have found this teaching relevant and challenging for your life. If you are in the Metro Denver area, please join us on Shabbat. Service starts at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. Kehilat Tenuva is located at 8891 Pose Boulevard in Thornton, Colorado, just a few miles north of downtown Denver. For more information, please visit www.graftedin.com. That's www.graftedin.com. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 29993, Thornton, Colorado, 80229. For inquiries, please call 303-761-9948 or email info@graftedin.com. Thank you for listening to the Shabbat message. Shabbat Shalom and Shavua Tov.